Power Records presents...
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. I'm your host, Rob Kelly. With me, as always, is my co-host from the Supermates Podcast, Chris Franklin. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. And for this spooky episode of the Power Records, yes, the spooky episode of the Power Records Podcast, because of course it is Halloween season. Behind the curtain here, it's October 1st when we're recording this, but the minute it hits October, it's Halloween season. Right, and if it's a Supermates podcast, September is Halloween season.
I was gonna say we jumped the gun by a month.
Well, you got a lot of Halloween stuff you want to get it all in, so I appreciate that. So for this episode, we are going to be covering two Power Record audio adventures: Spider-Man in Mark of the Man-Wolf and Dracula in Terror in the Snow. But before that, we have to thank our sponsors, InStock Trades. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
I have got the Marvel's Illustrated Dracula Premium Hardcover, written by Roy Thomas with art by Dick Giordano. Mm. This was actually an adaptation of Dracula that began in Marvel's black and white magazines in the 70s by Roy Thomas and Dick Giordano. I believe it started in Dracula Lives. You're the black and white magazine guy, so I think that's right.
That's right.
Okay. And they didn't get to finish it because the black and white magazines kind of started to go the way of the dodo. And about 10 years or so ago, they actually got the chance to get back on it, finish it. Marvel still published it. Marvel published it. And it's actually been in several different formats, but this is a color version. It's nicely colored by somebody that I can't see who colored it.
M. Hands.
June Chung. I actually have this book, and I'm a big fan of the original Bram Stoker Dracula. This is a fantastic adaptation. I wholeheartedly support that you go out and buy this right now, because if you buy it right now, it'll probably come in time for Halloween, and you need this for Halloween. And the in-stock trade price the retail price was originally $19.99. In-stock trade price right now is $10.99. You save 45%.
Good deal. I have that book, too, and it is a beautiful, beautiful volume. And it's just funny to see Roy Thomas and Dick Giordano on a Marvel book. You know?
Yeah, it's like you think of, especially Dick Giordano, you think of Charlton, but mostly DC. You barely think of Marvel at all. But I mean, this ties into our episode because this, of course, it's an adaptation of Stoker's novel, but this was the origin of Marvel's Dracula, you know, so this is their Dracula, as seen in Tomb of Dracula. This is just the events before, you know, that book started. So it does tie into this.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It's a very handsome volume. My pick is, I wanted to do the Essential Spider-Man, the volume that features the reprint of the story that Power Records adopted, which is from Amazing Spider-Man number 124. Unfortunately, that is Essential Spider-Man volume 6, which I guess is either out of print or it's out of stock at the moment. So I got something close, which is the Essential Amazing Spider-Man Volume 7, which reprints Spider-Man numbers 138 through 160, Annual number 10, and Giant Size Spider-Man 8 numbers 4 and 5. The cover is by John Romita. Can't beat that. And it's, you know, this is early 70s Spider-Man, which was like super awesome. I mean, it's just great, great stuff. I don't think I really ever really recommend much Spider-Man. It's not because I don't like him. It's just, I don't know if other stuff comes up, but these comics are so much fun. So the normal price is $19.99. That's 528 pages.
Wow.
In-stock trades price is $10.99. That's 45% off. So it's Spider-Man versus the Punisher, the Fly, Moses Magnum, the Grizzly, the Jackal, and the introduction of the Spider-Mobile. So just for that's worth $10.99 by itself. Driving right. around in the dune buggy there. You're so, right. Yeah, pick that up. It's 45% off. So for this and all your other trade paperback needs, visit InStockTrades.com. And we thank them for their support. So, yeah, as I said, we are going to be doing two audio adventures, Spider-Man Mark of the Man-Wolf and Dracula in Terror in the Snow. There is so much to say about Mark of the Man-Wolf, but we're going to do that after. Let's just get to it. So without further ado, this is The Amazing Spider-Man in Mark of the Man-Wolf.
Power Records presents The Mark of the Man-Wolf. The Amazing Spider-Man has many friends, but Jonah Jameson, publisher of the powerful Daily Bugle, isn't one of them.
What is this, Robertson? Be kind to criminals day?
Now, Jonah, all I said was we'd better be sure about our facts before we publicly condemn Spider-Man. If it turns out he is innocent...
Innocent? Maybe you don't understand, Robertson. A man has been killed. A man who happened to be a good friend of mine. And I believe that wall-crawling menace is responsible. I know it. So get this, Robertson. Since I can't hire someone to bring that killer in, I intend to see justice done another way, by making the public demand his capture at once.
I'm only your city editor, Jonah, but I think you're making a grave mistake.
Wait a second, Robbie. We've got company.
I'll talk to you later then, Jonah.
Hi, Dad. Thought I'd drop by to pick you up for dinner. It's time you met my fiancée, Christine Saunders.
Fiancée? Well, I must say, it's about time. We were finished, weren't we, Robbie?
If you say so, Jonah. I don't believe I've had the pleasure.
Sorry, Robbie. This is my son, John. John's just retired from astronautics. He was one of the last men to make a moonwalk. Son, this is Joe Robertson, my city editor.
Glad to meet you, John.
Same here, Mr. Robertson. Sorry we've got to rush off.
Moments later, in the hall outside.
Dad, would you excuse me a moment?
John, are you all right, son? You're white as a sheet and you're trembling.
I'm sorry, Dad. Got a touch of the flu.
The flu? You better take care of yourself, John.
Like I said, Dad, sorry. I've been under a strain. I'd better get home.
Later the same evening, in a brownstone overlooking the Hudson River, a door opens, releasing a sliver of yellow light and the stumbling form of a young man.
Nothing I can do. It's happening again. I'm changing. Changing.
And in several seconds, we see before us a man-wolf. Whoever was present in this creature a moment ago is dead. Now there is only an animal seeking someone. It runs through the darkness. Now and then it climbs and leaps from roof to roof as it hunts its quarry. And that quarry is man, one particular human. Ahead, the man-wolf thinks. The one I hunt is ahead. One final leap, and he looks across at the human being he seeks. And in one sleek motion, the man-wolf leaps.
What in the name of heaven? Who are you and what's the meaning of this? Do you realize who I am? The name is Jonah Jameson, my friend. And I'll have you know J. Jonah Jameson is not the kind of man to be amused by some sort of infantile joke. I demand an explanation for this ridiculous costume. I'm warning you.
It is then, of course, that Jameson realizes the creature before him is not wearing a costume. And it is then, naturally, that J. Jonah Jameson becomes afraid. And by then, you see, it's already far too late.
Good Lord in heaven! No!
We hate to leave J. Jonah Jameson at a time like this. But a few minutes earlier, in another part of the city, Peter Parker, boy student, who is otherwise known as Spider-Man, is passing a newsstand. One glimpse of the Daily Bugle and...
That does it. This time, Jameson's gone too far. The Spider-Man Menace, a new series by J. Jonah Jameson. Every time something happens in this town, Jameson blames me. According to Mr. Warmth, Spider-Man should be hunted down like a mad dog. Innocent till proven guilty. Remember that, Jameson? That's supposed to be the way we live. Why don't you leave me alone, Jameson? Why don't you leave me alone? I've had it, Jameson. You want me guilty? You've got it. I'll show you a menace, Jameson. You just better hope your insurance is paid up, buddy. Because, mister, you're gonna need it. I never asked to be bitten by that blasted radioactive spider. But I was, JJJ. And I've tried to make the best of it. But you just won't see that, will you? Maybe after tonight you'll be a little saner, JJJ. Maybe after you get a taste of what my webbing can really do, you'll leave me alone.
In some people, anger can burn for hours, but in others, it lasts only a minute or two. That's the way it is with Spider-Man, sometimes. Luckily for J. Jonah Jameson, this is one of those times. By coincidence, Spider-Man seems to have arrived at Jameson's apartment just at the right moment.
Now, that's a kick in the head. Either Jameson's taken to keeping pets or... All right, you saw a werewolf.
Spider-Man, you're in this too!
In case you hadn't noticed, Williams, I just saved your life. Say, Jonah, I didn't think you were so lovable. I'd say White Fang here had a grudge against you. Think about it, Jameson. Have you insulted any werewolves lately? They don't scare me a bit. I've been spoiling for a good fight, and it's about time I...
Our hero isn't faring too well. Look out, Spider-Man. Look out! Spider-Man, unconscious. It wouldn't be fair to call Jonah Jameson a coward, but at this moment, he is frightened halfway to death. But not frightened enough to resist a snarling man-wolf.
What? What do you want with me? Why me? I've never done anything to you. Never attacked you. Why did you pick me?
As though in answer, the man-wolf backs off, and Jameson's eyes draw downward, and he sees what he has not seen before. Man stares at wolf, and wolf stares in turn, and something passes between the two, a wordless communication, a plea for help. Then, without another sound, the man-wolf springs from the window, leaving behind him one very quiet, middle-aged entrepreneur and a slowly stirring Spider-Man.
Jonah, what happened to tall, dark, and hairy? Don't tell me you beat them all by your lonesome. If that gets out, we'll have to put you up against the heavyweight champ. Say, what's the deal, Jameson? Where are those snappy comebacks?
You're not going after him, Spider-Man. I won't allow it.
You won't what? After that character tried to kill you?
That doesn't matter. It's not important. If you attack him, I'll make you pay, you wall-crawling menace.
Look, I'm not your biggest fan, but that monster...
Spider-Man, I swear to you, if you move one muscle against that creature, I'll report this as an attempt on my life by you. Am I clear?
Loud and clear. Next time, remind me not to play Good Samaritan. Some people have a weird sense of gratitude.
Grateful? How can I be grateful to the man I hate most in the world? How can I be grateful... when the mad killer he saved me from is my son.
Hours pass. The man-wolf leaps and lunges from roof to roof, searching. It can sense its prey. It seems like no other the man-wolf has ever sought. The one who attacked me, sought to kill me. He is there. The one who must die.
Funny. I started this evening all knotted up. Now I feel kind of loose. It was the fight with the man-wolf. Somehow it released all my tensions, worked out all my anger. Almost. I can dig the world.
You spoke too soon, Spider-Man. Too soon.
Oh, no, not the man-wolf again. What are you doing here? If you're looking for a fight, look out. You're pushing us over the edge. We're going to fall. That funny newspaper of his, but... J.J. didn't pay a man to go this far, not to the point of suicide. For real, Funky, it doesn't quite explain why you wanted to attack me.
But then, as our puzzled hero chances to glance down at his struggling assailant...
Wait a minute. Lieutenant, I see you before, but where? I can't remember where. Whoops. I blew it. Lost my attention, my grip, and next on the list is... my life.
But a new element is added to the picture.
The moon. It's setting. And that means you're due for a transformation. Just as I thought. As soon as you realize what's going to happen when the moon goes down, you split. I'm sorry. You're not getting off that easy. Suddenly, you've caught my interest with that pendant thing. And there's no way I'm letting you slip out of my hands until... Did you gave me a couple of hours ago in Jameson's pad. Oh, Dan. Come on, Parker, you've got to snap out of it. You've got to think. Where have you seen that pendant before? Where? Where? Where?
Though he isn't aware of it, our hero is on the right track, and so is a certain publisher.
This is my son's apartment. All I can do is pray that I'm wrong. John? Son, are you there? Blasted boy, answer me! Oh, dear Lord, that costume. I'd recognize it anywhere. It's true, then. My son is a man-wolf. John! John, wake up! I demand an explanation at once!
Dad, is that you?
Of course it's me, John. And I'm alone. Now, will you tell me what's happened to you? What sort of insanity?
I wish I were insane, Dad. It'd be easier to accept than this.
For a moment, Jonah J. Jameson stares at the man he calls his son. And when he speaks again, his voice is softer.
Tell me, John. Please. I want to help.
If only you could. There's nothing you or anyone can do. This is my nightmare. I've got to get out of it myself, just as I got into it, all by myself. It all started 6 months ago at Cape Canaveral with the takeoff of a special unscheduled moon flight. It was the same as the previous public moon flight in every way. It would be mine. Back on Earth, I had a friend who worked in the quarantine center. With a little coaxing, I got him to borrow the moon rock for me. I had my rock made into a pendant, and I took to wearing it around my neck. Didn't think much about it at first, until one night, I was taking the turnpike up to New York for a late dinner date with my fiancée, Christine. Something happened to me. Something inexplicable. That's funny. Suddenly I feel tired, exhausted. Mustn't be getting enough sleep. Either that or it's this blasted night driving.
It wasn't the night driving. It was the moon. The sudden light touched me. I glanced up, and it was then that it began. The pendant, glowing, something about the moon.
Lord in heaven, what's happening to me?
Every month since then, I've been transformed. And to date, none of my efforts to stop that transformation have succeeded. Not even the radiation suit I had made to cut out the lunar rays. The first time I wore it, last night, the suit came apart. Just like my chances to see this madness through alive.
Don't talk like that, son. It's obvious you haven't thought this out at all. Why not just take off the pendant?
Don't you think I've thought of that, Dad? I have tried to remove the stone, but it's too late. It's grafted itself to my skin, permanently.
7 hours have passed.
7 hours? And now it's time to get on the trail of the man-wolf.
In another part of the city, at that certain brownstone, we find...
It's not like John to ignore a date. I hope he isn't sick. He has been acting oddly these past few weeks. That's funny. And I can hear the bell ringing upstairs. And if that isn't John up in the window, I need glasses. He wants to pretend I'm not here? All right, I'm not here.
And upstairs.
Now it's your turn, Dad. Better leave. Something changes in me when I become that thing. I want to hurt the people I love, like Christine and like you.
Now, son, if you're trying to tell me the reason you attacked me was to kill me, that's utter nonsense. You wanted my help, don't you see that, John? And you couldn't stop yourself, your animal self, from...
Meanwhile, a few blocks away, Spider-Man starts on his moonlight journey. Hurry, Spider-Man, hurry!
Great, what a good night's sleep can do. I almost feel like myself again. Now, what was going through my mind? A pendant. A pendant. Hey, wait a minute. My subconscious must have been working overtime because it just put two and two together and came up with four. That costume the man-wolf was wearing, it wasn't fabric. It was some sort of insulation material, the kind used on spacesuits for astronauts. And it just hit me who I know that has an astronaut's son. And who was attacked by a werewolf in astronaut clothing? J. Jonah Jameson.
A quick glance in the Manhattan telephone directory tells our hero what he needs to know, and so...
Maybe I'll have some good luck for a change. Bingo! Looks like I've hit the jackpot. It's the man-wolf. Here we go again, Wolfie. This time, I have a theory to try out. It's my guess that pendant is what's making you a werewolf. And so it has to come off. Even if I have to tear it off.
Spider-Man, what's happening to him? He's changing.
Dear Lord, I didn't realize. The pendant had grafted itself onto his skin.
The transformation begins, and the identity of the monster becomes apparent. All too painfully apparent.
John. Son,
Are you all right?
He's just fine, Jameson. Now that this thing's off him. Better get him a doctor, though. Fast.
A doctor? What? The publicity?
Publicity? Your son's life was at stake, not to mention the lives of people he might have killed. Let's hope we stopped him in time.
Johnny, are you okay? Mr. Jameson, is he okay?
Answer her, Jameson. Tell her everything's real swell. Maybe someday you'll even begin to believe it yourself.
Spider-Man, wait, I...
Save it for the papers, Jonah. Save it for tomorrow.
And so ends another adventure of the Amazing Spider-Man.
And that is Mark of the Man-Wolf. Chris, would you agree with me in that this is probably... I don't necessarily would say that this is Power Record's best audio adaptation, because everyone knows that's The Amazing Adventures of Hollow Man. But it's, you would say this is got to be the most iconic one, like the one that the most people have heard.
Yeah, I'd say this is at least definitely the Marvel. It's definitely the Marvel one, and perhaps Marvel and DC, but it's most definitely the most famous Marvel Power Record, I would say.
Yeah. It tends to be the cover that you see if anybody ever does an article about the Power Records. It tends to be mm-hmm. this cover. I mean, part of it, I think it is because it is adapted from a actual Marvel comic by Jerry Conway, Amazing Spider-Man 124. And it's just a beautiful book. I mean, now, as usual with Power Records, they futzed with the dialogue. So if you look at the word balloons on the Power Records version, it looks like it's written by a child.
Because
with a Sharpie marker, because they had to, of course, reduce the dialogue because they couldn't have anybody talking so much. But in terms of the production, this is really them at their best. I mean, that the part where the Man-Wolf howls when Spider-Man yanks the moon rock.
Oh my gosh,
that is genuinely chilling. And as a child, I was, you know, really like freaked out by it. It's still very powerful. I listened to it again today, and it really packs quite a wallop.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first time I heard this, I think I did not have the comic. I either had a 45 of this without the comic somehow, or I had that friend that I brought up before, that frenemy that had the had the album that had this, the Captain America story, the Fantastic Four story on it, and I think the Hulk at Bay, and that he, you know, we listened to it, and but I remember, you know, hearing that part where that's vivid in my mind, that I remember going, oh, you know, when he rips it off of his neck and you hear him howl, like you said. I mean, I just, the picture that it painted in my mind is the artwork's great in the comic, which, you know, we can see on the blog page, but it was even worse in my mind, you know. And the funny thing was, I actually had a Marvel Tales that reprinted the first issue. Because this actually kind of smashes Amazing Spider-Man 124 and 125 together.
Yeah.
So I mean, it takes elements out of it that aren't pertinent to the Man-Wolf story. But I had seen, you know, I had the comic that went with part of this record, but the back half I didn't. You know, so it was kind of an odd thing. So my imagination had to fill in the second half of the record. So it was kind of an odd situation to be in, but. Yeah, I think, and just the rain, the sound of the rain through the whole thing, it's so moody. I mean, it's definitely, it feels like one of their horror records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the music is really well done. Spider-Man / Peter Parker is played by Peter Fernandez, who was Speed Racer.
Wow.
So, I mean, and he does really quite a good job as Peter. I mean, he really kind of captures that. You know, it's slightly heroic, but I don't know. To me, that's what Peter Parker sounds like. And maybe it's just because I had this so at such a young age that it's just, you know, to me, it just became iconic. That's just what Peter Parker sounds like, is that Peter Fernandez voice.
Wow, yeah. You know, and I think, on some of the other ones, like that Draco, Spider-Man, the Invasion of the Dragon Man, that one, the Spider-Man actors, you know, more jokey, more flippant. I think it's the same guy that's also on the Mad Hatter one, the Conquistador that we've covered. This guy here, he suits this story because Spider-Man was in such a bad place when this story happened. I mean,
he's angry. He is super angry at J. Jonah Jameson right at the beginning.
Yeah, and the bad part is in the Power Records, I mean, you can't really understand why he took this time to get specifically angry with him. But in the comics, Gwen Stacy had just died, and the Green Goblin slash Norman Osborn had died, and Jameson was trying to pin the death of Norman Osborn on Spider-Man. So, I mean, you have, you know, he's in such an angsty mode in this story that the other Spider-Man actor just wouldn't have cut it in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so glad they got this guy. He's got a lot more gravitas. He can really bring the rage, you know.
Yeah.
The only down thing is it maybe it's just to my ear, but it sounds like him and Peter and John Jameson are voiced by the same actor. Maybe it's just me, but I kind of wish that if it's not the same actor, they sound a lot alike. I wish maybe there was a little more distinction between them, but maybe it's just me. I don't know.
It's certainly possible it's the same actor. Power Records seem to use like the same four or five people for everything.
Yeah.
I think they had one woman that was just all the women parts. You know,
yeah.
That was it.
You're Sue Storm and Wonder Woman and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, and any assorted girlfriends you needed. I mean, she was the... Yeah, I mean, this is a very... I mean, the guy, whoever does the werewolf snarls, he's doing a great job. And in terms of the audio mixing, it's really well done. Because, like, in the sort of foreground audio-wise, you've got all the dialogue. And then in the background, you hear the mineral... like he's constantly in the background sort of snarling. It's like, you know, it's exceptionally well done.
Yeah. You can hear Jameson like trying to, you know, what are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah. You know, all this stuff. And yeah, he's growling in the background. And yeah, I mean, just the production values on this one, it's like they're just up a notch or two, you know.
Yep.
I mean, Power Records always did a good job, of course. But I don't know. It just seems like they really brought their A game to this one. It really does put you in this, just there's just this feeling of dread about the whole thing. You know, it's not some silly, you know, story where Spider-Man just happens to run into a werewolf. I mean, there's some definite human drama going on, and you actually feel, you know, you get the feeling that you should feel sorry, pity for this werewolf creature. I mean, you know, that's not something easy to do in a kid's record, you know. So, but I think this deserves to be, you know, touted as the one everybody remembers because it's that damn good.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean John Jameson is Larry Talbotting all over this record. I mean, he's absolutely in utter torment. And they said the artwork is by John Romita and Gil Kane.
Which
is a really nice combo. And there's one page where it's there's a flashback of John Jameson telling the story. And you see him, you know, when he's talking about his wolf transformation. And there's one where he's menacing a woman. And it's a really pretty intense image, again, for a kid's record. I mean, this is something we've covered on the show before. That these Marvel Power Records are pretty heady stuff for kids. And this, like you said, this one fits in quite well with the rest of the monster records. I mean, it really does.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think Amazing Spider-Man 124 is Gil Kane pencils and Romita inks, and then 125 is Ross Andrew pencils and John Romita inks. So you get a little Ross Andrew in here too in the back half of the comic, and it's really kind of neat because I think this is the first issue Ross Andrew drew of the regular Amazing Spider-Man title, so. So you get, it's kind of, you know, he was such an important part of the 70s. So you've got basically all the 70s Spider-Man artists in this one Power Record. You know, that's another neat thing about it, too. But, yeah, I mean, the panels that Kane and Romita did when you first see John transform, I mean, that is just, I mean, you can just imagine that in a horror movie. I mean, just it's very cinematic the way. I mean, you can imagine Lon Chaney changing,
yep.
You know. But you know, maybe it's just me, but you know, the Man Wolf kind of his design is very wolf like face. I mean, he has the shape of a wolf for his head.
Yeah.
I mean, that was something you didn't see in in horror movies as of yet. So, you know, this is before An American Werewolf in London, you know. So, I mean, this is several years before that. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, looking ahead because, you know, pretty soon all werewolves will look like this, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of ahead of the curve too there. But yeah, but the audio and the matches the comic, you know, I mean, it's a perfect meshing of them. And then, you know, Power Records was usually pretty good about that, but sometimes there'd be hiccups here and there. But I can't think of anything that jumps out at me and says, nope. The only thing I'll say, that one thing you should take away from this, don't take things away from the moon, kids.
Yeah. I mean, they're violating several quarantine ordinances, I'm sure. You really just can't take off the surface of the moon and just put it on your chest. That's just not a good idea.
Right. Oh, this is a groovy pendant. I think I'll wear it and, you know, with my, and show my chest hair and my low-cut fly collar top, you know.
Yeah. You know, people take a lot of risks in the Marvel Universe. And just don't worry about it. But, and yeah, in classic, you know, comic book superhero style, in the end, Spider-Man tosses the pendant into the river as opposed to giving it to any number of scientists in the Marvel Universe to check out. He just throws it in the river because, you know, won't harm anybody there.
Right. I mean, he doesn't take it to Reed Richards or take it to Doctor Strange or to a priest or he just chucks it in the river because that's never going to come back to haunt him.
Nope.
You know, you know, one thing I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, this is in the comic too. You know, at no point does anybody else, somebody got the memo. They all got the memo that said, okay, we're going to call this guy Man-Wolf. Mm. You know, they don't call him Wolfman. They call him Werewolf, teenage werewolf, werewolf of London. No, they call him just Man-Wolf. He's Man-Wolf. I mean, it's...
There you go.
It's like he had the Ben Cooper costume of Man-Wolf with his name in it.
How awesome a Ben Cooper costume would this have been if they had done it? Man, that yellow and green tunic and your arms and legs would have been all furry. Oh, that would have been awesome.
What I think's neat with the Man-Wolf is that color scheme in that outfit's a callback to... a previous John Jameson appearance in Spider-Man back when Romita first got on the book, like way back in, I don't even know what issue of Amazing Spider-Man that was. I think it was number 42. Yeah. Number 42, where he gained superpowers, but he was in like a yellow and green spacesuit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Yes. So this is that spacesuit just ripped up with the sleeves and the legs out of it.
Nice.
Yeah, nice callback. And what's really odd is that his girlfriend has a matching outfit in the comic.
Yes, she does.
When she shows up, even though she has no idea that John's running around as a Man-Wolf. But I think it's interesting how they cut, you know, they cut out. You never hear anything about Gwen in here. And there's just a very little bit about Norman Osborn. I mean, he doesn't even really come out and say it. But, I mean, they cut out all that. Those subplots to merge this together, but it's interesting how they edit it out because it really does work. You know, it's kind of you wouldn't think it should, but it does. Mm-hmm. And if you've read the Spider-Man comics, it just holds together that much better too. So
yeah, it really is. It's really one of their best, and rightfully probably their most famous one to date. And of course, as it was with almost all Power Records, this was repurposed several times. It was put out as a 45 all by itself, and then it was also put out on a book and record set with another story with the Invasion of the Dragon Men. So, you know, as usual, Power Records got their money's worth out of this thing, and as well they should, because they did a really, really, really fine job here. One of the things I find interesting, maybe even downright frustrating, is in this book and record set, on the back cover, on the inside back cover, was the sleeve where you put the record. And it says, you know, powerful adventure series featuring these famous monsters, Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman and Man-Thing. Crime takes a beating as Captain America, the Avengers, Hulk, and Spider-Man zap the lawless. The Avengers? When did Power Records do an Avengers record? The answer to that is they never did.
Wow.
That's very frustrating, that the idea that they were maybe thinking of doing one or had planned to do one and then never did it. That bothers me tremendously to think that we never got an Avengers Power record. But
yeah, that's something. I mean, it's interesting, too, that the monsters get top billing up there. They get mentioned before the superheroes.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, it was the 70s, man. The 70s. Horror comics were selling like crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, even Man-Wolf will come back. And, of course, he fights Spider-Man a few more times. But he gets a series in one of those horror anthologies. And I think it's, like, drawn. Isn't it drawn by George Perez? Like,
yep.
It was, like, one of his first gigs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, I don't even know. It, like, gets all into the... Like where the gemstone came from is like some kind of alien gemstone or something.
Of course,
something.
Of course.
Yeah. So I, the only reason I know this is because of his Marvel Handbook entry. And I remember reading it going, what? And he's standing there in some crazy like sword and sorcery alien armor with a sword. And it's like, that's Man-Wolf.
Wow.
So from humble beginnings here, he becomes, you know, John Carter of Mars or something for some reason. I don't know.
Maybe they can bring him into the new Spider-Man movie when they reboot it for the third time. They can do Man-Wolf or something.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I think when they did the animated series of the 90s used John Jameson coming back from space to bring Venom in, and that's kind of where they cribbed it for Spider-Man 3 too.
Oh, that's
so.
Right. That's right. Yeah. I forgot. Oh my God. I forgot all about that.
Yeah. So John Jameson can bring the Man-Wolf stone and the Venom.
Yeah. You know what? Never mind. Don't do that. Strike that. I forget I said that. I'm going to take that out of the show.
So, Venom-Wolf.
So that's Mark of the Man-Wolf. It's really one of the better ones. And like I said, anybody who doesn't own it, go and pick it up on eBay. You can get it for a couple of bucks. And it's, as you've heard, it is a ton of fun. And the comic is awesome. So we're going to move right on to the next one, which is Dracula, Terror in the Snow, one of the Marvel Monster series that we just mentioned. So without further ado, here's Dracula.
The mountains heaved in agony. A winter storm in the Transylvanian Alps raged more intense and furious with each passing moment. This winter would be harsh indeed for these long-weathered mountains, but they would survive. Yes, the Alps would survive, but will a very lost Dracula and Rachel Van Helsing survive as well? Power Records presents Terror in the Snow.
I can hardly see. Let me rest. Please, I'm about to collapse.
We move on, Van Helsing. To stay here would mean the death of both of us.
Then I won't go on any further. I don't care if I die. If I take you along with me.
You will move, woman. You have no choice. What?
Shit! I'm falling!
No! You shall not be so lucky. Fall to your death. Not while I need you more alive. For almost 20 years I have sought to slay you, to add your name to my ever-growing legions. And now I must prevent your death at all costs. For the moment at least, I must be your savior. So now, my lifelong huntress, we move on, and though it aches us both, we must cooperate. Our survival depends on it.
On they trek aimlessly through the endless blizzard until they find a cave.
I have prepared the fire for you, Van Helsing. Rest by it quietly. Your hurts will soon pass.
Will the broken bones heal themselves too, Dracula?
I provide you warmth, comfort, and shortly, food. What else could you want?
What I've sought for all these years, Dracula, your final and everlasting death, I owe you for the countless horrors you committed against me, my family, to the world. Even if I must forfeit my own life, I'll see the day that you're long dead and buried.
Hardly, my dear. You can barely stand on that foot, let alone fight me. No. I'd say for now, you will simply do as I command. I see your dinner has finally arrived, my dear. Pardon me, please, while I tend to it. Remain where you are, great goat. Tonight, you will fill the stomachs of two hungry souls.
The giant mountain goat merely nods its wide horned head and waits. As death descends madly upon it, it tries to shake loose its attacker, but it fails.
Taste is bitter and wretched, yet still I feel strength again flow through my bones. I protect the one I have ever sought to slay. I feed upon the blood of an impure beast. Yes, since the crash, much has been changed. Too much. And all because Van Helsing found the second book of sin. I remember how we fought for possession of the book. Those ancient scrolls inscribed with a spell to utterly destroy all vampires, including myself. But as we struggled, Rachel Van Helsing grasped the crumbling pages and made her escape. I instantly knew the dangers to me and my legions if she could translate the symbols and spells, and so I followed her. Her helicopter rose quickly through the Transylvanian winter countryside. I got onto the machine's lower railings, and I thrust myself into the cabin.
Dracula, don't know how you got in here, but you're not staying. If that book is so important to you, there's no way I'm going to let you get it.
Woman, you are a fool. What makes you believe you can keep possession of anything I desire? But we shall discuss the papers in a moment, after I rid us of some unneeded baggage.
What are you doing? Stay away from me! Stay away!
God, you killed him without even a moment's care. You're a monster. An inhuman monster.
His life is unimportant.
Then you're in for a rude awakening, Dracula. He was the pilot, and I haven't the slightest notion on how to fly this. And something tells me neither do you. We're already miles off course, heading into the Transylvanian Alps.
I can see that, Van Helsing. Yes, already there is snow and ice. We must turn back.
And how are we going to accomplish that, Dracula? As I told you, I'm not a pilot.
Then we shall simply crash. And though I shall survive, my dear, I doubt if you will. Brace yourself, woman, and we shall see if the fates are kind to you this night. As the giant helicopter smashed into a great white peak, which suddenly jutted before it, I live as always before. I survive where others perish. But the book, the cause of all this madness, little matters now in this desolate wilderness. We are so far from civilization that none shall ever find this. Van Helsing awakens. Good.
I can't move. I think it's broken.
That will not do on the long journey before us. You will need a bandage.
No, leave it alone. You're hurting it.
Silence, woman. Until this heals, you'll have to live with pain, which may keep your mind off attacking me for a while. Now, come with me. If we are to reach other humans, we must begin.
Why are you doing this for me? Why don't you just take my blood and be done with it? You've wanted me dead for years.
I still do, my dear. But common sense tells me not to give in to my lusts. If I were to take your blood now, I may not find any for days. Plus, you are being kept alive as an emergency measure. Think of that, my dear Nelson. And you shall see the futility of your situation. Enjoying your meal, Van Helsing. Good.
You're thinking of fattening me up for the final slaughter. Dracula, you've got a lot to learn.
Little matter, Van Helsing. I will eventually win. I have always won my battles.
Maybe not this time, Dracula. The sun will be up soon, and when you go to sleep, not even my broken leg will stop me from slaying you. If I can't slay you, then I'll kill myself. In such a way, you'll get no blood from me.
My dear, you know as I do that you'll never kill yourself. Not until the final moment you are positive your death would cause my own. Do not try lying to a master liar. It will do you no good.
The brief respite is over. Slowly and painfully, the strange duo press on, advancing against nature's fury and the approach of daylight.
Struggling is useless, Van Helsing. Only 1 hour more to travel before the sun rises, and I aim to have traveled far in that time.
Then I'll try anything to delay that, Dracula.
What?
Rachel Van Helsing flings herself from the snowbound peak and falls, taking a suddenly off-balanced Dracula down with her.
Witch! Because of you, we might both be doomed.
But Rachel doesn't answer. Down they continue to plunge, until the rope snaps taut about the rock, which Rachel tied it to moments before, assuring herself a delay in their travels, but not a deadly one.
Woman, you're trying my patience too far. I may yet taste your blood and take my chances alone.
No! I think you'll keep me alive and risk more trouble than have me dead and perhaps kill yourself as well.
Really, my dear, I doubt that. You see, even if I am dead, one of my legions will find me and resurrect me. Frustrated, dear Van Helsing. I knew you would be. humans always find it impossible to accept a being who can live forever. Immortality frightens those who fail to understand it completely. Perhaps you should learn what it means to taste eternity on your lips. Would you like that, Van Helsing? Would you like that? Well, worry not this night, my dear. You'll not become a vampire until I can resist the bloodlust no more. No, into this cave. We will spend the morning hours here. There shall be another long night tomorrow, Van Helsing. So plot not to slay me and rest instead. You will need your sleep.
Her body aching with pain, Rachel Van Helsing closes her eyes, but not to sleep. She still has a mission to perform this morning, and she will not rest until the deed is done. All the while through these daylight hours, Dracula sleeps, his strength returning to his weary bones. But Rachel Van Helsing still waits. Waits for the moment she will finally slay the dreaded Lord of Vampires. And at long last, that moment is now. Silently, she rises, stifling the aching pain she feels grow in her leg. And holding the stake she has kept hidden in her parker since before she began this ill-fated journey, she treads softly towards the sleeping figure. He doesn't move, and with a bitter smile on her lips, she thrusts down and misses.
You foolish female. Did you truly believe you could take Dracula unawares? Now there shall be no rest for you, Van Helsing.
I expect nothing from you, Dracula, except to kill you when I can.
Still you persist, my dear. You waste your time on fantasies, then. Now move, or be dragged through the snow and ice.
Perhaps it's fatigue, bloodthirst. But Dracula does not sense the hulking form which follows his path. Until it is too late, that is.
What?
The great beast attacks. The Lord of Vampires has been too long without blood. And so it is Dracula who falls to the snow-covered mountains. And it is Dracula who screams as salivating teeth dig through his flesh. Rachel Van Helsing trembles at the sight of the two thrashing forms. And though she fights the urge, her hand almost involuntarily reaches for her gun. And she fires. There is a sudden and horrifying cry. And the great beast falls back dead.
I so desperately wanted it to kill you. I couldn't let it. I just couldn't.
Of course, my dear. You had no other choice.
They're somewhere down there. Pilot, keep flying.
I don't know how much longer we can go, Mr. Drake. The wind's acting up pretty bad.
You'll keep this crate flying until I've found them. Wait, they're down there. And Rachel's walking on her own. Okay, pilot, lower away.
That helicopter. Frank! Frank!
Come back here, woman! Time has finally come for me to taste your blood. Drake will not help you. No, my dear. You shall finally learn the ecstasy of vampirism.
No! You'll never have me, Dracula. Never!
Yes. I shall derive great pleasure from this moment. But no! They're firing wooden bullets at me. I must escape their path. Yes, Randolph. I'll see if he wants you. Or if he'll abandon you. Still hunt me.
They're splitting up, Mr. Drake. Should we land or go after the man?
I can't leave Rachel out there to die of exposure. Land the copter, pilot.
A few moments later, and...
Frank, you've got to find him. Kill him.
Calm down, honey. After you've warmed up a bit, we'll discuss it. But now, pilot, head back to Transylvania.
Back to Transylvania, Frank? We can't stop now. This may finally be our chance to destroy Dracula. We can't give up now. We can't.
You've got a definite stubborn streak in you, little lady. Why?
I don't want to bore you, darling.
Consider me a captive audience. Bore on.
You know of my grandfather, Abraham Van Helsing, and of his battles with Dracula, and how all believed the vampire had been killed. But he wasn't. Years later, the fiend returned and murdered grandfather. But still, he wasn't done with our family. When I was 9... killed my parents as I watched helpless in horror, even as he then moved to slay me.
With your death, young Rachel, the Van Helsing name shall be no more.
His fangs started for my neck.
Hold it, Dracula. Don't even look at the girl. She'll not be your victim tonight.
Quincy Harker, my family's longtime friend, burst through the door and fired his jet-propelled wooden darts from his wheelchair.
So, you've added another new device to your arsenal, eh, Harker? Well, keep the girl for now, old friend, but beware. There will come a time when she will be mine.
When the echo of that cold laughter faded, The reality of what had happened rushed at me.
Come to me, Rachel. You've gone through far too much for a girl your age. Far too much for any person.
Quincy took me into his home, raised me into womanhood. Does that explain why I'm, as you say, so stubborn? Does it, Frank?
There is no answer, nor is there a need for one. But below...
He had gone at last, searching elsewhere on this mountainside. Weak as I am, I must try to make my way to safety, or perish in the attempt to fly. Already I feel my insides shriveling from blood loss. I can remain here no longer. I have no choice but to brave the storm as a night-winged bat. No, its force is too great, too powerful. It is impossible to fly through. Then am I to be trapped in this hellish wasteland forever?
It appears not, as...
What? Hey, shooting through me, numbing my arm. How? So Van Helsing and Drake are back, attacking me once more. I must flee before they can attack anew.
For a moment, a wobbling, unsure Dracula hesitates as he stares at the bottomless chasm before him. Then he leaps and plunges ever downward toward his apparently unpreventable destruction.
What? He's gone? But it can't be. It can't. There's no cave for him to hide in.
Any way for him to be hiding in a snowbank, right?
Maybe.
Keep searching, Frank. We'll finish him off as soon as we find him.
If we find him, you mean Rachel. It's that very big if which prevented us from slaying him years ago.
This time he's bound to be finished, Frank. He's weak. Weaker than he's been for years.
You're right, Rachel. But he's managed to survive almost half an eternity. So let's pray this time we didn't muff it. Because if we did, if he's alive, somewhere out there, too bad for us all. Too bad for us all.
And that was Dracula, Terror in the Snow. Chris, what do you think of this one?
Oh, I really think this is a strong one, too. I mean, it really adapts Tomb of Dracula, that issue, fairly well. That's a standout issue in a excellent series, and it does a really good job adapting it. So it's got to be good. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it gives you what you want. Dracula sounds like what you expect Dracula to sound like back, very Bela Lugosi. You know, he's got that. I mean, it's not completely, but it's definitely in that vein. Pardon the pun. So you know, a kid's gonna if Dracula sounded like didn't sound like that, they would have called foul on it. So you know, mm-hmm. they went with the voice that they knew kids were expecting, and it works. I think it's got a really strong cast. I think the actress that plays Rachel Van Helsing is really strong, and she might be the same woman that does all their voices. Yeah. She's got a hint of an accent, which I liked, you know, of a European accent, which I like. Of course, she should, you know, she's a Van Helsing. I really like this one. But I'm a fan of Tomb of Dracula anyway. So this had me, you know. Had me going. I never had this one as a kid, and I probably the first time I heard it was on your Power Records blog. But I think this is a good one. What do you think of it?
Yeah, it really is quite well done. It's funny that like this feels very Hammer to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of, I mean, Hammer didn't do anything as ambitious as this. I mean, this whole, a whole movie set out and stuff, but it just has that, to me, this one and the Frankenstein one, they kind of have that feel to it. And you have to think that Hammer was an influence because Hammer was just about wrapping up when mm-hmm. when they made this. But so Hammer films were, but you know, you have to think that the people that made this, the Hammer film, the Hammer Dracula films were probably the key influence in terms of how to do it as a audiovisual presentation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this definitely has that more sinister feel that the Hammer movies do. I mean, you know, their Dracula is more, you know, just more outright evil. I mean, he does have a personality. I mean, obviously, and Wolfman throughout the series showed that he was more than just the big bad, but he wasn't a whole lot more than that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he gave him some depth, but he never. he never made you really feel too much sympathy for him, because he would remind you that, no, this guy's an evil bastard, you know?
Yep. So,
I mean, and that's how Christopher Lee played it, you know? So you gotta, yeah, that's good. That's a good point. I mean, you've got kind of the Lugosi like voice, but the whole story does seem, you know, quite Hammer like, and I like that, especially with the, you know, Hammer would emphasize the Van Helsing character and the heroic figures in each story, and as they were pitted against Dracula. A lot of times Dracula was just, you know, he was in the background through a good chunk of the Hammer movies, and, you know, sometimes Christopher Lee didn't even speak. he just growled and grunted, and I thought this one, you know, it is kind of it's an interesting one to pick, because I mean it's in a very untraditional setting for a vampire story.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it works, because, you know, they drop you in the middle of it, but they give you enough to go on that it works. The comic can stand on its own, and so can the record. I mean, there's been other power records where, you know, well, like the Hulk at Bay, you're dropped right in the middle of it, and then you're left in the middle of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel this one. I feel this one works a lot better in that regard.
Yeah, it's almost like a weird, like, one of those bottle episodes where it's just one setting with just mm-hmm. a couple of characters. I mean, obviously it isn't, because they're outside, but, you know, it is just kind of a two-hander through most of the story with, you know, a little bit of appearances of the guy with the helicopter and stuff. It is very funny to me to how much Rachel Van Helsing hates Dracula. Like, she's unrelenting on it at right. every moment. She's just like, no, I hate you, and I will kill you if I can, you know? And right. she just never lets up from that, which is a very sort of interesting angle, and almost like a weird, like, not to put too much onto this, but almost kind of like very feminist, you know? Like, she's not a wallflower here. Mm-mm. You know? I mean, no, they're taking this from the comic, but it's kind of, again, like you mentioned, it's an interesting story to pick, and to, again, to have as a kid's record, to have the protagonist be a female and be kind of such a butt kicker as she yeah. is. I mean, she's just like, no, Dracula, I'm going to give me a moment. I will kill you. I'm not going to rest. That's it. Yeah, you know, like, yeah, we're teaming up right now, but I will kill you. Make no mistake.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, if you compare this to other Marvel comics at the time. I mean, you still, the female characters there were still, they were still struggling with making them, you know, empowered on their own. I mean, you still had, you know, Sue Storm, Sue Richards, you know, shrinking from every threat they faced, no matter, even though they were 100 and some issues into the series at this point. But, you know, with Rachel, I mean, they show you why she would hate Dracula. I mean, she comes in and Dracula's murdering her parents.
Yeah.
You know, he murdered her grandfather. I mean, you know, that's the fact that Wolfman followed through with, yes, you would want to see this guy dead. You know, I mean, there would be, you would not be like, okay, well, I'm just going to get along with him so we'll both survive. No, the whole time you were with this guy, you'd still want him destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, even some of the things she does, I think that when she jumps off the cliff with the rope tied on, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, it's you know, that just goes to show, you know, she's not, you know, she's not a willing participant in this. She's, like you said, she's never changing her mind that she wants to take this guy out. And as soon as she gets in that copter, they're going after him and they're firing wooden bullets at him. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that's a nice touch. I mean, I mean, throughout the Tomb of Dracula series, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, there were victories on each side and little victories, and it was a nice, you know, never ending struggle going on back and forth in the series. And this is a nice little moment in that. But I do have one question though, as good as Rachel Van Helsing is, why in the world did she wait till almost sundown to try to stake Dracula? She was in there in the cave with him. All it's like when he nodded off, the sun came up. Why didn't she just go spank him?
Well, it's like all those Dracula films where like they wait until like 10 minutes before sunrise to start their attack on the humans. It's like, why didn't you guys just start it a couple hours earlier and you wouldn't have had to deal with the whole, oh my god, the sun's coming up, I gotta rush back to my coffin. None of these guys need an Apple Watch, you know? I mean, something.
damn, I overslept, you know.
So. Yeah, damn it, oh, why did I do that? I will say the one line, and it's literally the last line in the story, which is from Frank, which kind of like reduces some of the drama, where he talks about, so we better pray this time that we didn't muff it.
Yeah.
That word just jumps right out of you. It's just like not terribly dramatic.
No.
You know? But, you know, what the hell?
Well, you know, Frank Drake, he was kind of an odd character in that series anyway, because it's like if you follow his story, it's like he was broke. He was, you know, an ancestor, I mean, a descendant of Dracula, and he inherited the castle, and he went there and got his girlfriend vampirized. And, I mean, it was one thing after another. I mean, it took him a long time to, you know, really get his head on straight and get in the game, even though he kept running into Dracula, you know, so... He's being extra, you know, macho in this comic. Yeah.
We should mention before we wrap up on this that this is an adaptation of Marvel's Tomb of Dracula number 19. The art is the covers by Gil Kane and Tom Palmer, and the inside art is Gene Colan and Tom Palmer. You can't beat Gene Colan on Dracula. You just can't.
No. Born for it.
Yeah. Now this story is called Terror in the Snow, but the original comic it was what, Chris?
It was Snowbound in Hell.
That's a great title. That is, I mean, you could see why they didn't use it barely with Power Records. I'm surprised they didn't try and use it.
Yeah.
But that's an amazing title, but you could see why they had to change it for.
Suicidal Clowns will do, but not Snowbound in Hell.
No,
forget
it. Too far. Too far.
It's a bridge too far, yeah. So they changed it on the cover, and they changed it on the inside. Actually, it says Terror in the Snow twice, which I think is interesting, on the title page, on the splash page. And they took the Tomb of off the title. It just says Dracula, which that was kind of interesting. Of course, they changed the name of Werewolf by Night completely to Curse of the Werewolf, so I guess Dracula should feel lucky that they didn't muck with his logo, you know. This is the Wolfman Colan run on Tomb of Dracula. I mean, of course, you know, we're not saying anything nobody said before, but I mean, it is just fantastic. And I really do think that's some of the best work from both of those guys. And that's saying something. I mean, I think that's both of them at the top of their game. You know, of course, Wolfman went on to do New Teen Titans and Crisis after this. But I think for Colan, I liked his Batman stuff, but I think this was probably his best work, the series as a whole, you know.
I'd agree with that.
And you know, you throw in Tom Palmer on top of it, and it's like, wow. You know, it's fantastic. And I always thought that Gene Colan was more – I liked his horror work, his Dracula work, over his superhero work. I thought it suited his style more. It seemed like he was – and I don't know, maybe he loved drawing Daredevil and Iron Man, but – he just seemed like he was into it more, you know, kind of like John Buscema and doing Conan versus the Avengers, you know. Mm-hmm. But, so definitely I think this is, this issue is memorable because it is so different. I've got the Tomb of Dracula Essentials, and this one stands out, you know, among those. And then the fact that they made a Power Record of it makes it jump out that much more. And I do think they did a really good job with it.
Yeah. The last thing we'll mention is I love on the Power Records, these book and record sets. Again, this story was repurposed. It was done as a 45, and it was it was just done as the 45. It wasn't actually – they didn't put all the Marvel monsters together on a record, which is makes me sad. It would have been amazing.
Would have figured it would have traumatized children. They would have had to pay their psychiatric bills.
Maybe so. Well, you know, I mean, they didn't worry about the other stuff. But no, they never did a full-size LP with all four of these Marvel monsters, which is a damn shame because that would have been really, really cool. But I do love on the inside cover of these records, the end papers, such because it features a drawing by Romita, and it's mixing all together in one shot. Spider-Man, Cap, Hulk, Thing, Human Torch, Dracula, Man-Thing, Werewolf by Night, and the Planet of the Apes characters. And Frankenstein. It's back in the days when you could just mix your copyright properties and it didn't matter. You know, you could just have them all together. You can't, that you'll never see again, but I just love that shot. First of all, as a kid, it bothered me when you would have villains pose with heroes. Because it's like, turn around and get him. Captain America, chop Dracula's head off with your shield or something.
But, I was going to say the same thing. Pull a Baron Blood on him.
Come on. Yeah, exactly. Very, do that. But it's so cool. I just love the idea of seeing Spider-Man next to Cornelius. And, you know, the apes. It's just such a neat thing.
You know, seeing something like that makes me think, you know, okay, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, when they're through the cosmic phase, what if they went into the horror phase?
Oh.
Can you imagine it?
Morbius. That'd be so cool.
I mean, Universal's, you know, trying to do this Universal, you know, universe of movies that connect. But can you imagine if Marvel kind of beat them to the punch and started, you know, peppering in like Werewolf by Night and their own Dracula?
That would be amazing. That would be amazing. You should do
that. And then we could see Captain America decapitate. I would want to see Chris Evans decapitate Baron Blood on screen.
That would be, oh, man. Willem Dafoe is Baron Blood.
Oh my God! That's it.
Done. You. I needed to get one. You got the Christopher Lee as Ra's al Ghul, which was brilliant. So I'm glad I got to come up with one at least on this show. So
and we can in that way we can make up for his Power Ranger mask in the first Spider-Man movie.
There you go. Done. And all see, it comes right back to Spider-Man. It's perfect. So, anything else you want to say about Terror in the Snow before we move on to feedback?
I wish it had been snowbound in hell. I just like saying that.
I understand. I appreciate that. So, we're going to just briefly, before we wrap up here, we're going to do some feedback that we got for the Pirate Record Show since the last episode, which was the Star Trek show. And first message we got was from Zum Yukinori, and he says, "This episode takes me back. I was given the version of the Time Stealers record with the motion picture photo cover from my late comic collecting uncle, who admitted that he originally ordered it for himself from Westfield Comics because he expected it to have the Neil Adams cover, because the original Adams cover was featured in the solicitation."
That
is a bait and switch, man.
Mm-hmm. You get Kirk in pajamas instead of Neil Adams.
Instead of Neil Adams. Here's this dull photo of everybody in gray staring at something. How exciting. he says, "Not much else to say beyond what you gentlemen covered, except in my years, I believe the same actor voiced both Kirk and Spock, and he was the same actor who voiced Metamorpho in the Fumo, the Fire Giant recording. I wonder if there is a way to find out for sure." I don't know, Zoom. You know, I keep trying to find credits for things, but nothing's ever turning up. So, but maybe one day. We got an email from Stephen Kane. He says, "Hi, guys. I recently found your podcast. I've enjoyed listening to it, especially the Power Records episodes. There is one in which I loved as a kid, as I'm hoping you'll feature soon, Batman Stacked Cards. That one really unnerved me as a kid, especially all the grinning Joker victims." You know, that is a really good one, and that would have actually worked for Halloween as well, because that's a really spooky story.
Yeah, everybody remembers the line about giving the Joker a lobotomy in that
one. Some of my favorite Batman characterization of all time. Is that. We got a message from Wolfgang Hartz. He says, "Are the Power Record stuff available on CD?" No, Wolfgang, unfortunately, is not. And that is part of the reason that Chris and I like have this show, is to present these stories to everybody, because this stuff is still unavailable. It is amazing to me that Marvel or DC have left any money on the table in terms of, you know, repurposing material that you could sell. I cannot believe that DC doesn't put these out as, you know, just like as an iTunes record.
Right.
You know, I mean, what's the problem? You know, I mean, so they are unavailable. And so you just have to just find them on vinyl. I mean, I know people have put them on CD, but in terms of official releases, no. So unfortunately. And then Joe X chimed in saying, again, what I just said, probably not officially. Peter Pan's Records is now Inspired Studios, but the rights to the Power Records recording mostly lie with the licensors, or else tangled in a legal quagmire. I think that is part of the problem, is that they, you know, they did have all of the licenses all at once. Although, you know, they kept them separate, so you would think that, again, DC could have DC, Marvel could have Marvel, but, you know, who knows what the deal is on those. And one of the articles I wrote for Back Issue about the Power Records, the Spider-Man Power Records, I interviewed Jerry Conway about the Mark of the Manwolf story, and I asked him, like, how this whole thing came about, and he said that it was Chip Goodman that basically sold the rights to power Peter Pan records of these Marvel comic stories, and according to Jerry, he sold them for like a song because he didn't know what he was doing. Chip had no idea what he was doing, and he sold them for like peanuts. So, you know, who knows? Maybe whatever company that is now Peter Pan, or I guess the Inspired Studios, as Joe mentions, maybe they still have the rights. Maybe they bought one of those weird ironclad 50-year contracts or something. But again, somebody owns these things.
Yeah.
And you would think having a Spider-Man record that you could release, again, digitally, even without the comics, you would think, you know, they would just be so easy to repurpose and sell.
Yeah, I mean, you hear these weird stories. Like, I know there was the Blue Beetle radio show kept Blue Beetle from being used on Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. They could not use him because whoever had the rights to the Blue Beetle radio show back in the 40s still had the rights, or whoever took over. And I guess at some point it lapsed and they were able to use him on The Brave and the Bold, but you know, that's why he never showed up there. So it's like, yeah, so these people could still have the rights to the audio files. And it could be some weird thing where they have the rights to the audio, but they still can't put it out unless they make a deal with DC or Marvel. And then they're not willing to negotiate, or they don't think it's worth the time or the money. And so nothing happens. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And finally, we got a message from Kyle Benning, and he says, these were both really fun adventures. They definitely nailed that classic Trek feeling. I really like Spock and Kirk's voices on this. I feel like the voice actors really nailed the verbal tics and aesthetic of Shatner's and Nimoy's voices. Yikes, that the renderer voice was like nails on a chalkboard. I'd rather listen to Man-Bat's shrieks on a continuous hour-long loop before hearing another line spoke by the renderer.
Yeah, Man-Bat.
And then he ends it with great stinger. I love that episode of The Simpsons where Homer is the monorail man, because that was my little tribute to Leonard Nimoy. So, and then Chris came in and responded with,
"Yes, that every so often when we have hot dogs at our house, someone will ask, 'Hey Spock, what do you want on your hot dog?' And one of us will answer, 'Surprise me.'"
When we did our little tribute to Leonard Nimoy, I had so many clips of Nimoy that I wanted to use as a stinger. I had such a hard time deciding which one I wanted to use. And then I finally was like, all right, let me just go with just, I love the idea that having the beam up sound effect, I thought was just too perfect to pass up.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much going to do it for this episode of the Power Records podcast. Thanks everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed these two fantastic audio adventures. Chris, as always, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me and my wife Cindy at supermatescomic.blogspot.com. We are doing our House of Frankenstein series, where we are talking about a classic horror movie and a comic featuring the monster from that classic horror movie meeting a superhero each episode. So we're knee deep in that, and we're having a ball.
It's a really fun series, and I love you did it last year, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm glad you're doing it again, because they're really a lot of fun. I mean, I love all that stuff, so it's extra fun that hearing you guys get to cover it. And I like the idea of doing a film and a comic both in one episode. It's a good stuff.
Thank you. We're having a good time with it, so it's kind of hard narrowing it down to four movies. So mm-hmm. I was like, but I got lots of material to go for the next several years. So if we keep going, then we're in good shape.
It is very much fun, everybody, to hear Chris talk about Ingrid Pitt in a way that doesn't just get him punched by his wife on a continuous basis. Because it's hard to talk about Ingrid Pitt in anything other than ways that will get you punched by your better half.
Yes, this is true.
You know, she's Ingrid Pitt, you know? I mean, you can't help it. So if you want to hear some very sophisticated linguistic legerdemain, listen to these episodes of the Supermates podcast. So
I can't even pronounce what you just said.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So anyway, like I said, thanks everybody for listening. We look forward to doing another episode down the line of the Power Records podcast. And as always, if you want to shoot an email to us, it's firewaterpodcast@conquest.net. You can see some pages from these audio adventures, from the comic version, of course, on the Tumblr, which is Power Records. It's fireandwaterpodcast.tumblr.com. So thanks everybody again for listening. And until the next episode, drop the needle and turn the page.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.
And so it has to come off, even if I have to tear it off.